Welcome back for another episode of the Beyond Body Podcast. I'm your host, Mia Findlay, an eating disorder survivor, advocate, and recovery coach. And this podcast is all about motivating, inspiring, and most importantly, getting real about recovery. As always, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which I am seated and recording today, the Gadigal people. I send my respect to all elders and ancestors and any First Nations people listening. This week, I am so fortunate to be joined by the lovely Shelley Lask. Shelley is the founder of Body Positive Health and Fitness. She's also one of the founding members of Health at Every Size Australia and is now involved in their steering committee. Shelley and I met because we both spoke on a panel for a conference last year, and Shelley was there to talk about her field of expertise, which is a weight-inclusive, health-at-every-size approach to movement, which is precisely what she does with her clients through her business. And that is exactly why I knew I had to have Shelley on the podcast and extend an invitation, which she graciously accepted, because the way that Shelley approaches fitness and movement is inclusive, empowering, and so not diet culture. It feels revolutionary to talk to her about how we can feel about movement, how we can approach it, because it's just so not what we're used to seeing in mainstream media, on social media. And she's out there doing just incredible work. So today we unpack some of that toxic fitness diet culture messaging, which has permeated the fitness sphere since its inception. We talk about developing an intuitive relationship with movement. And we talk about this within the context of people who have a history of an eating disorder and those without. So we really cover a whole lot of bases as it relates to developing a healthy relationship with movement, or changing your previously unhealthy relationship with movement into one which is balanced and enjoyable and that you're engaging in for all the right reasons. Just for context, we did record this some months ago, just before I took a social media break and was kind of banking up my content for when I would release it on my return. So thank you to Shelley for her patience in this episode being released. And if we say anything that is very 2021, that is why. This was recorded a few months ago, but I knew it had to see the light of day because it is just such a phenomenally valuable chat. So enjoy. So Shelley, thank you so much for agreeing to come and have a chat with us today. Obviously, in our intro, I would have mentioned to everybody listening today that we were lucky enough to be on a panel speaking to some future doctors about some really important topics as it relates to health. And you were there to really talk about the connection between health and every size and fitness, because that's essentially your wheelhouse. And wanted to come and have you talk to people about why it is so important for us to be looking at fitness through that lens, because it's been something that's been so lacking in the conversation. So would you mind terribly just giving people a bit of background about who you are and what you do, kind of what you're all about?
Sure. So I'm a Health at Every Size personal trainer. I have been running Body Positive Health and Fitness for 8 years now. And essentially, I work with all sorts of people to, you know, put movement into their lives in ways that are enjoyable and meaningful and safe. And that means, you know, different things for different people. And I work with people, you know, one-on-one, in small groups, in groups. And essentially, I see a really wide range of people, because I think, like with the stuff that we have around food, the stuff that we have around movement, you know, it's a whole cultural thing. And so for me, it's really nice working with people, whether it be on things like finding types of movement that they enjoy, or whether they have a specific movement goal, which is just about, you know, how do I improve it, X, Y, Z thing, or make this thing a little bit easier. Yeah.
Right. What kind of drew you to that? How did this passion come about for you, I guess? Did you have your own previous relationship with fitness and then want to share it with others, and then see that there was this whole world that had not been explored as far as really making it accessible to more people? Because it is such a narrow image that we have of what fitness looks like and what pursuing fitness is supposed to look like. So how did that passion kind of come about for you?
It really came about over a number of years. So I was someone that I'd had no interest in sport and fitness growing up. I was like, yeah, I'm smart and I'm good at music and that's my kind of area. And I didn't really see its relevance in my life. And I think that was in large part because the way that movement was approached in school was, you know, you're either good at running or you're not good at running, so don't bother. Or
the dreaded
netball A team, or you know,
the dreaded
the beep test. Yeah. And honestly, what I took from the beep test is I am bad at running, which is not what it is there to measure whatsoever. So I just kind of opted out from, you know, any of that sort of stuff. And obviously, I was still moving, but in not in ways that I considered at the time to be physical activity, because I had that sort of narrow way of thinking about things. And then in my early 20s, I took an interest in mixed martial arts that kind of came out of nowhere and was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, learn how to fight and I'm going to, you know, do all this stuff. And in my mind, I didn't, somehow that felt different because I hadn't thought about that. It's very much a sport, but in my mind, I hadn't thought about it like that. And it was so different from my experiences with physical activity previously that I just kind of got to go into it fresh. And first of all, I loved all the stuff that I was doing, but I just loved, you know, how my body was feeling, what the changes that was having on my mental health. Like it was just such a positive experience for me. And it got me into a lot of other kind of, you know, enjoying moving and starting to be in my body a bit more. And I think one of the things that was really frustrating for me as I kept going along in the whole, you know, world of I'm gonna say fitness, but it's, you know, it's all pretty broad, was that all of the things that I found really empowering about being more active and about, you know, using my body to do cool stuff wasn't really the emphasis in a lot of spaces. And I was seeing, yeah, there was just a lot of stuff where I was like, I wish this was different. And so I can't even think what year any of this is now anymore. But as I got more and more into feminism and then learning about fat activism, I started to see even more that I was like, well, this just doesn't match up with my values anymore. And I essentially kind of thought, well, I'd like it to be like this and maybe I'll have a crack at seeing if I can do it like that. And I'd been working on my relationship with movement over a number of years because that has definitely gotten, you know, to an unhealthy place at one point as well. And so I'd done a lot of that work and then I was just seeing reflected back in the industry that, oh, everything around me seems to just reinforce all of the stuff that's not great, and a lot of really unhealthy stuff is really normalized. And yeah, I got to a point where I was like, I'm just going to have a crack and see if I can do it the way that I'd like it to be. And through that process, you know, I met lots of other people doing similar work, whether it's in the, you know, the movement space or whether it's in, you know, all sorts of other areas. And, you know, we've all sort of learned together as we've gone along. But a lot of it is about, yeah, trying to give people an opportunity to get all the good stuff out of, you know, moving their bodies and exploring that sort of stuff without the sort of side helping of, you know, crappy diet culture stuff that comes along with it, and that has more of an emphasis on listening to your body and self-compassion and all of those sorts of things that aren't really widely encouraged, but that I think are what we need to have a good experience with being active, and for it not to be just the, you know, in the context of it's an 8-week challenge, but to be like, you know, I'm a person, I've got a body, my body moves, and how can I, you know, do that in a way that is life enhancing and meaningful, and that's a positive thing.
I think that people really, because of this narrow representation that's across general media, social media, in our peer levels, that it's either I see myself as a fitness person or I don't, which is why I personally, when I went through recovery, stopped using terms like exercise and, as you refer to, more movement and joyful movement. That was so earth-shattering to me because, like you, I grew up really not thinking of myself as someone interested in sport or interested in fitness. I'm generally not, but I do enjoy it, and had to kind of foster this very different approach than what I saw everywhere else. So I think people are really missing out because our definition of fitness and exercise is so narrow that you have to be someone who's like ripped abs and gym junkie, and it's got to be like a lifestyle as opposed to sometimes I like doing this and it's great and then I move on.
And I think I can also get stuck in that like the performance side of it as well, because I think sometimes part of being a quote unquote, you know, a fitness person or a sports person is being good at it, and we don't have to be good at it. And I think like sometimes it's really easy to move away from the idea of that movement is about changing your body to being, you know, being athletic or being strong or being able to, you know, do certain things, but can easily become a new way of self-identifying. And I think it's one of the things that we need to be really careful about, that we're not pinning our self-worth or sense of identity onto things that are so changeable, because, you know, you can get as strong as you like and you just don't know, you know, what's going to happen to you down the track. And all of us at best are going to age and our bodies will change. And that's absolutely not just kind of how we look, but also how we move and what our capacities are. And so I think, you know, what is freeing about not being defining yourself as being, oh, I'm a person that is very fit, or I'm a person that's very physically strong, or I'm a person that, you know, is the best at XYZ, is that it does allow you to move through those different phases of your life and enjoy what capacities you've got when you've got those capacities, and also make space for the fact that nothing's permanent. We're going to keep changing.
It's so true. I recovered from my eating disorder, and then within a few years I was diagnosed with stage 4 endometriosis. So really, really debilitating. I've just come out of a flare up where I've literally spent half my day working from bed when I'm not having a 2.5 hour nap in the afternoon. And like you said, it's that relationship with movement for people, you know, whether or not they've had a disordered relationship with it or not, is about that flexible, use movement to meet yourself where you are and support, you know, it's meant to support all the other wonderful things we're meant to do, as opposed to the reverse, that if my expectation of myself was that I must engage in movement exactly the same every week, when those flare-ups come around, that's not supporting my health at all. So we tend to have this really rigid, you know, set of expectations around, you know, what movement's meant to be or and how you're meant to engage in it, that you're meant to have this routine and you must stick by that. And it's that the fact that that's in supposedly in aid of health, but is sort of training you to ignore your health and what you need on a day-by-day, case-by-case basis, it all just seems a bit contradictory.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're not all about to be in the Olympics where we, you know, we have very clear outcomes that we're aiming for. I'm certainly nowhere in that category.
Yeah.
And so because of that, but it, I mean, even if you're at an Olympic level, I mean, absolutely resting when you're not well or when you're injured, that's part of being a professional athlete too. But for the rest of us especially, you know, we need to preemptively build that flexibility in, and to, I think, be careful sometimes with the, you know, like that whole strong is the new skinny thing, just really, that's a real sort of red flag to be careful of, I think, because I think especially for people who are in recovery, moving towards a different aim to define yourself by can, if it's something like that, can just be something to be careful of. And so to really preemptively acknowledge the fact that, you know, our bodies aren't static things, our abilities aren't static things, and to build in that the skill set, I suppose, to, you know, listen to and respect our bodies and to let our movement ebb and change as we do is a really important thing, whether you're someone that's in recovery, whether you're somebody that's not really had a particularly disordered relationship with movement before. It's just an important thing because it's just going to avoid a lot of heartache, I suppose.
Yeah, slippery slope, disordered or not. So what are some of those, you're talking about sort of some of those frustrations about, you know, strong is the new skinny, et cetera, that we see as such a dominant message in the fitness space. What are some of those other red flags that maybe you've observed, or clients? Do you have clients come to you who have had those, you know, really rigid relationships with movement that you've got to kind of deprogram them from? What are some of those dominant red flags that you see kind of in the fitness movement at the moment?
Oh, well, there's a lot. There's a lot of
them. Cut to 3 hours from
So the sort of like the shallow end of the pool there, that I think the easier ones to see are the things like, you know, using movement as, you know, a justification for eating as if you need one. You know, all of those more unhealthy things that we see, those really unhealthy messages being reinforced. There's sort of like this cutesy thing that I see brands do sometimes. When I say cutesy, that's in very inverted yes. comments, where they're like, oh, you know, I only work out so I can eat whatever I want. And it's like, oh, that's not cute. So there are those sorts of things, and they're just very narrow ideas of what a fit and healthy body looks like, what fitness looks like, that are really narrow. So, you know, it's almost always young, thin, white, able-bodied, all the rest of the sort of privileged categories, engaging in exercise that is very strenuous and, you know, impressive looking, and very, it's often kind of like what's on the trendy thing at the moment. So at the moment, and this is not to shame any of those activities, like I do a lot of them and they're fun, but at the moment, you know, doing stuff with heavy weights is kind of the thing, whereas, you know, it was aerobics at some point, it's been various different things. So we just see a really narrow idea of what, you know, physical activity looks like, and we don't see a whole lot of, I am, you know, doing some gardening, or I'm going for a walk with friends, or any of those things that are also physical activity, also, you know, really great for our mental and physical health. And then there's the sort of more slippery ones, which are the ones about, it's not about how your body looks, it's about what your body can do. And it's like, not everybody has the same capacity as each other, and that's pretty ableist. And just one that can be another thing that puts our sense of identity and self-worth onto something that's not always going to be under our control. And some of the, I guess one of the other things I really don't like is the thing about there's one correct way to do things. Like, this is everybody, there are a lot of, especially I guess in the training spaces, things about, you know, this is the one correct way to squat, and if you're not doing it like this, it's, you know, it's you, something's, you don't know what you're doing, or any of these sorts of things. It's like, well, actually, I don't know what's going on with everybody's anatomy and why they might be choosing to move the way that they're moving.
Yeah,
that stuff's just really, I think, unhelpful. And there's a difference between learning, you know, safe technique for your body and all of those sorts of things, and prescribing a one size fits all version of stuff. I could go for days. There's a lot of stuff that's not great.
Yes.
And that's really sad, because it can be such a positive experience.
Yeah, it's so interesting that like such a broad thing like moving your body has found these really narrow representations, particularly like the aesthetics, right? That is so incredible. And I think it's been such a contributor to our overall beliefs and messaging about health, that, you know, you can't be in a larger body and have, you know, a health status that people think is quote unquote acceptable, whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I love seeing people like Meg Boggs, who obviously, you know, just released her amazing book and did this incredible press tour. To see her in mainstream media was so wonderful, because I see her doing stuff and I'm like, you could train me for a year. I wouldn't have a hope in hell of doing that. But who's less likely to be fat shamed on social media? The person over here with her hand up, who people listening to this can't see putting a hand up, but it's right. So it's, I think the fitness industry and now its proliferation on social media is a big contributor to, you look like this or you don't belong in this space.
Absolutely. And we get the thing at the same time that, you know, on the one hand, we're saying, you know, Australians and, you know, people in general need to be more active for their health. It's really important. We're getting all of this messaging. And then we're also getting this messaging, which is like, you know, if you go into these spaces where you can engage in some of these things, you know, these are the types of people that represent that space. Oh, you might not even be able to find clothes that fit you that you can wear for these activities. Just so many narrow things. And I think, you know, if we were really serious about health, which is, you know, pretty broad in and of itself, we want those things to be accessible to people, and we need to take out some of that stigma. And I think the other thing as well is that we, you know, it's very cool seeing people in all sorts of bodies doing really, you know, cool athletic things. And again, we need to be really careful that as a culture, that doesn't become the like, it's okay if type of pass.
Yes.
Because there are people in all sorts of bodies who also, you know, can't jump up onto something really high, and that's not the type of movement they engage in. And they're still, you know, worthwhile people, regardless of their health status. And we don't know what their health status is. Like, movement is one small part of it, and there are so many ways to engage. That's very hard to capture on Instagram, you know, quick reel, you know, it's all as nuanced as anything else, I guess.
But see, that's what's missing is the nuance in the messaging, right? And even I want to put this disclaimer here. This is not to say that, you know, anyone is obligated to engage in movement if it's something they genuinely don't enjoy. If your movement is going to the shops and like down to the mailbox, and if that's even your ability level, then fantastic, whatever. But even if it's not your thing, it doesn't have to be your thing, right?
That's exactly. And I think, you know, yeah, the actual nuance of it is, if you even have the ability to do all of those things and you stayed in your room for the next 3 years, you're still a worthwhile human. So it's, you know, if it's something that we value and is aligned with our values and that we're able to do and engage in the level we're able to, then that should be as accessible as possible. But I think it's all of the, you know, social media stuff and media in general, there is so much self-identity stuff that gets caught up in it really easily, and it's hard to capture that level of nuance. So I love that we get to have these discussions.
I totally agree. And, you know, I think that this is such an important time to be having that conversation. I mean, you're in Sydney, yeah?
I'm in Melbourne.
Oh, you're in Melbourne. So you're not
also in lockdown.
Yes, I was going to say, still lockdown buddies. So, you know, from the beginning of COVID, I remember watching, you know, news breakfast or whatever it was. And it was literally day three of the first lockdown, way back what feels like a decade ago. And what was the first thing everyone was discussing in relation to COVID was weight gain anxiety, was fitness, you know, regimens for your, for in the home, and how to make the most of, you know, your daily walk you're allowed to go on. And so it is absolutely everywhere, and it permeates sort of every level of what we're interacting with. So being able to, I think, really give people greater access to, like we've said, more nuanced messages around movement is more important now than ever, because that messaging has not stopped in a year and a half. There is still the weight gain movement anxiety being pushed from so many and profited from, right? How many
absolutely have
used this fear mongering to push their own services? It's a bit stomach turning, really.
It is. And there's, you know, there's a very real anxiety that we're all having for very good reason. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of, you know, things that are outside of our control. And unfortunately, some of these businesses are pushing the idea of that can be a good place to put our anxieties, to try to, you know, control our bodies or to strictly control our movement. And that is really dangerous and unfortunately poorly regulated. So it's happening. And I think we need to really be, especially when we're in these situations, really mindful of acknowledging how we're actually feeling in these situations and making space for some of those feelings, and making sure that, you know, if we are engaging in movement, that it is something that we're doing to support our mental and physical well-being, and not something that we're doing as a way of, you know, pretending that we're not in this awful situation or of, you know, or as being our only coping mechanism. And those messages don't really care about whether we're doing that or not. They're just here to say in 8 weeks, you will feel totally different.
Yeah, and you can put your focus on this and be totally consumed by your calorie deficit, because instead of thinking about your panic, all you're going to be thinking about is food because you're in starvation mode. Right. And I think it's so important, particularly because we've seen such an escalation in people presenting for treatment for eating disorders, to emphasize that movement can be an enormous component in disordered eating and disordered behaviors for those very reasons. It can be a huge distraction control mechanism. And that's not to say that movement can't support your mental health. It's sort of like I was talking to somebody about a journal about emotional eating the other day, and I could tell they were trying to get a quote out of me to be like, all emotional eating is terrible. And I was like, what do you take your girlfriends when they get broken up with? Ice cream and vodka. Like, what are you talking about? Of course we, you know, comfort eating.
Like a real friend.
Yes, exactly. So of course we emotionally eat as part of our coping mechanisms, and as we should use movement as part of our coping mechanisms, but not solely as a coping mechanism or one of a couple of disordered, you know, uses of that coping mechanism. So yes, of course, it's okay to say, you know what? Yeah, walking does make me feel better in the pandemic, in a lockdown. Understandable. It's to the degree that that's happening and also the compulsion and the level of anxiety you might feel if you didn't do it that day is a really good indicator of whether or not you should be doing it.
Yeah, those are really helpful checking points, I think. And I think when we think about food, it's quite clear that we want to be more internally directed than externally directed when that's a safe thing for us to do. And it's the same sort of thing for movement. So some of these programs that are saying in 8 weeks, you know, follow our strict program, even if it doesn't have the food component, if it's got a very strict movement component that's, you know, doesn't have self-checking in it, that's something to be sort of mindful of. So to have that flexibility that I know even for myself, like I'm noticing that going for walks is really helping with maintaining my mental health through this time, but I don't have the walk must be for X minutes and yes, take, you know, at X speed, and I must, you know, stop and start here and there. Like it's more I'm checking in, and there are some days where I'm like, nah, I'm going around the block and that's it. And there are other days where I'm like, I feel like a wander, the weather's good, I'm getting out and about, or I might feel like something that's a higher intensity way of moving my body, maybe not. And that's not going to affect how I feel about myself. And
yes,
that's, I think, really important.
Yeah. And so much of it, you know, when we're challenging whether or not people, you know, need to change their relationship with food, we've got to get them to eat the food to test that out and see how they react to it. Mm. It's kind of the opposite with movement. If you think it's coming from compulsion or anxiety, you got to kind of take away the movement and see what emotion is kind of left there. If you can go a day or a few days without it, or even a week without it, without anxiety, or I've got to compensate for this, that means I can't eat X or Y, or you're really paying attention to what you're eating in a restrictive way or a compensating way, red flags. Yeah.
Really helpful.
So I know that you are, you have a position with Health at Every Size Australia. Yes.
Yes. I'm now on the steering committee.
Fantastic.
It's been a really interesting learning process to grow as an organization that started out very small. And now we have, I can't remember how many hundred practitioners registered with us. Our main purpose, I suppose, is to, well, here goes my big mental. Fantastic.
My bullet points.
Yeah. but we want to make Health at Every Size approaches to health available to consumers, and for, you know, training in the Health at Every Size approach to be available to healthcare practitioners, and to try to get better access to a Health at Every Size based healthcare.
Yes.
Across the board through policy too.
Yeah. So how do you incorporate that into your own work with clients? If you had somebody come to you specifically because they saw that you were Health at Every Size aligned, what can they kind of expect from you in terms of your approach if you're looking at it through that lens?
Yeah. So through that lens, they can expect that I or someone else using that approach, we're going to be neutral about your weight and any weight changes that you might have. So that will never be the focus of what we're doing. It's about finding joyful and life-enhancing and meaningful movement that you can engage in to support your health and what that means to you, knowing that that's going to be different all the time. Everyone's capacity is going to be different and to change. We're in the background pushing for, you know, more equitable services and better access. So we're sort of doing that background work. But from a face-to-face perspective, it means that you know, I'll meet you as an individual and find out about you. I will know and believe that you're the expert on your body and that I have a bunch of information about movement and about anatomy and that I can, you know, help guide you to move in a way that's important for you. But that I'm not there to hashtag no excuses with you or to, you know, yell or for any of those sorts of things, that I'm there in a role of supporting and guiding you through your relationship with movement and through, you know, the doing of movement. I think the one of the big differences is that we don't position ourselves as the expert, especially when it comes to your body. And there's that built-in flexibility. So if I'm doing a session with somebody and they're full of beans and, you know, we've been working on, you know, doing some strength training or something like that and they're feeling really good, then we'll, you know, I've got a vague plan of what we're going to do, but it's not rigid and we'll do those things. But likewise, if they turn up one day and they're like, I had a really rough day at work and I'm exhausted, it's like, maybe we'll do some nice mobility stuff and we'll return to, you know, our regular programming when we're ready. So it's more flexible. There's not the assumption that everyone can do the same things. So when I meet somebody, I will always talk to them in our first consult about what their relationship with movement has been like and how I can support them with improving that. That might mean connecting them in with, you know, mental health professionals or dietitians or anybody like that. To get the support they need, that might mean that they need to work with an exercise physiologist first, but going through assessing how I can help and what sort of movements they enjoy and don't enjoy, what their movement history has been like, and so that we can explore that together. And then, yeah, there's a lot of checking in. You know, we check in at the start, how things are feeling, how this person's body's feeling, what the energy levels are like. We check in as we go along. And I think what I really like about it is that even in, say, a group class, someone can say, oh, I'm going to just sit this one out, or, oh, this movement doesn't feel good for me, I'm going to do this instead, or what do you recommend? This one feels weird on my elbow. And I might go, oh, I'll try this. Just tell me how that feels for you. And likewise, someone might say, oh, you know, I reckon I can do two more today, I'm feeling strong. So there's
It's collaborative.
Yeah, right. Thank you. There's 5 minutes condensed.
No. Because I was thinking, I was just reflecting back. I remember when I was still in recovery, I hired a PT. She was great. I had had a PT years earlier when I was like really in the depths of my eating disorder. And even my eating disorder didn't like the militant. I was like, hey, there's already a militant voice up here. I don't need one out there too. And she was really collaborative. It was really, if we got through a few sets and I was like, I can't do another burpee, she'd be like, don't do it then. That's fine. Let's move on to the next thing. And I was like, really? And then she was like, you're paying me. I'm not here to, you know, lecture you. I'm here to meet you where you are and do what you want to do together, which was so important, particularly for where I was in recovery, is I had made it clear to her, this is my history. And she was like, I hear that. And she really took the approach of, you're guiding this and I'm just going to then give you the framework based on what you want to do.
Spot on. Yeah, that's it. I think the other thing that we do that's a little different, or that we're more deliberate about we consider it, it's our responsibility to meet you where you're at. So I will do my best to suggest things that I think are right for you, but you will let me know. But also to make sure that, you know, the locations and the equipment we're using and all of those sorts of things are going to be accessible to your body. Mm-hmm. And some of that involves, you know, finding out from people. All of this is just comes down to collaborative, really, and accessibility.
But so important, because like we've talked about before, it's about broadening the gatekeeping that's going on to say there are people out there who aren't interested in yelling at you and giving you an aesthetic goal or giving you just a numbers goal, that you can even just come in and be curious and explore. But that that's why I wanted to talk to you after we were on that panel together, because I was like, I don't meet that many Shelleys. I need to talk to her and let people know that there are so many other entry points to movement that are just about exploration and curiosity rather than fit in this box. or get the F out, essentially.
Yeah, and fit in that box week after week. Like, don't have an off week, don't have a week where, you know, you've got an injury and you still would like to move, but not in a way that's going to exacerbate your injury. And so maybe it's, you know, all right, you know, your ankle's not feeling good today. Let's do some stuff that we can do from a seated position.
Yeah.
It means that we've got those options, because I think one of the things about approaching it from, you know, it's a lifelong relationship with movement, is that if you know it's going to ebb and flow, you're not stuck in the thing of, oh, no, only these four activities count as, you know, real fitness and everything else isn't really worthwhile, where it's like, no, there's plenty of stuff we can do. There's times where you'll do nothing at all. And, you know, it's also a great experience when someone says, you know what, I'm exhausted and I am going to sleep in tomorrow instead. Mm-hmm. Like, fantastic. Like, listen to your body. That's great.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think the misconception, which is wild to me, but I've spoken to personal trainers while they're studying and done some panels where they'll ask questions to people in the industry. And I had someone say, oh, you know, like, if you don't do weight loss stuff, like, what do? Do you guys just go for walks and stuff? I'm like, no, it's really weird that it's like, you know, your education has been around fitness and movement.
One
and
outcome.
You can't think of any other reasons to move. And it's just, but we can do all sorts of things. There are people that I work with that are, you know, lifting a lot of weight or running really far. There are people that I work with that are enjoying going for a walk twice a week. There are people that I work with that are, you know, working on being able to get up and down from the ground independently. There are people that I work with that literally just like doing different stuff all the time and having a good time moving their body, and that's their main thing. It's not one thing, because people aren't one thing, and it's not one thing all the time. Just the lack of yeah, it's a real thing. Like, if you think about what are our values with fitness, if that is your only value about, you know, improving your capacity to physically engage in the world. Yeah.
It's kind of like saying, you know, the only measure of success is how much money you take home at the end of the week. It's like, well, that doesn't sound very fulfilling, right? Like, isn't it also how you help people, connect people, your creativity? Like, is it just about the dollar amount? Because if it is, I don't know how sustainable my interest in it would be.
It's my friend Chris Sarong, who's also, he's an amazing trainer. He said something where he's like, I'm a fitness trainer, I'm not an aesthetician. And it's like, yeah, I mean, no shade on the beauty industry, do your thing, but like, that's not our industry.
Yeah.
So
absolutely, such a great point. So if we have, which we will do, because that's predominantly my demo, if we have people out there listening who have come from a disordered relationship with movement and they're kind of questioning whether or not movement is something they can have in their life again, or they've come from even just a disordered kind of chronic exercise background, what would be sort of your number one piece of advice for those people?
Get support, I think, is the biggest one. And get support from people that are eating disorders informed as well. As personal trainers, we can work with people who are in recovery, but if you're in the sort of sticky middle of it, that's when you'd want to be working with an exercise physiologist. And whoever you're working with, have them be working with the rest of your treatment team. So
beautiful.
You're all communicating together and all on the same page. And, yeah, just reaching out for that support, I think, is the biggest one, because that support is there. There are people out there that get it and that want to do no harm in their approach, and that, you know, want to see you engaging in movement in a way that is joyful and that is embodied and all of those things, and that's not going to set you back.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think you've noted a couple of times, which is so important, that just like I can't step into a dietitian's role, I can't step into a PT's role or, you know, a psychiatrist's role, that it's a holistic thing. Everyone's sort of got their approach and their strengths, and that we really need to like have the safety of our clients as the number one. I remember I had a client who told me, we're working on their compulsive exercise, told me that their PT told her to lie to me about how much movement they were doing together. And that was the tipping point where I just put my foot down. I said, they've got to go.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. So knowing sort of what your wheelhouse is super, super important. But not only that, as you said earlier in our chat, making sure you're checking in. You know, I've never heard a PT say that before, which is amazing to hear from you, to check in around sort of the mental health component with people's relationship with movement, not just the injuries and the, you know, energy level, but like, how you doing? Like, how are you going? You know, how is it feeling when you're engaging in movement mentally, not just physically? So I think that's a beautiful inclusion that a lot of PTs would benefit from hearing about for sure.
And having those discussions, I think, as well with the person that you're supporting or who's supporting you about what it will look like if you're having a bit of a hard time with those sorts of things. So what are the things that you both want to keep an eye out for and what you'll do if some of those things start to come up? Because if you've had a history with movement that has been a bit disordered, there's always the chance that, you know, those things can come up again. So having a bit of a plan in place together of what you'll do if that happens and what things you might want to keep an eye out for, and just keeping that as an open conversation, I think is really important.
Brilliant. What a fantastic piece of advice to end on. Thank you so much for chatting to us today, Shelley. I've personally learned so much, and it's given me, like I've said, so much confidence. There are people out there like you, not just spreading the message you are, but making such a direct impact on people one-to-one. So I'm really, really thankful that you've come to chat, and I have no doubt we're going to get some great feedback, and this is going to help a lot of people in a lot of different stages of recovery or just, you know, throughout their relationship with movement, who'll get so much use out of this. So I really appreciate it.
Such a pleasure. Thank you, Mia.
Of course. Where can people come and find you?
I'm
the plug. This is the plug.
this is it. I'm also a self-promo. I'm at Body Positive H for Health, F for Fitness on Instagram, and Body Positive Health and Fitness on Facebook.
Right.
And that's the name of my website as well. So if you pretty much Google those things on there.
Wonderful.
Love to connect.
Fabulous. I will have all of that in the show notes, and this will all be all over my social media, obviously. So please go and show Shelley some love and bask in her immense wisdom. And I have no doubt that we'll have you back, because I'm sure we'll have a bunch more to chat about. I don't know how we got this in under an hour, to be honest.
Oh, well done us.
Well, stay safe and sane in lockdown. And thank you again, Shelley.
You too, Mia. Thanks, Pete. Take care.